Welcome to The Primal Pioneer, a no-nonsense podcast teaching you how to become more informed and empowered with regard to your health so you can support your health with the least amount of medical intervention possible. I'm your host, Heather Shepherd, classical homeopath, author of The Sunlight Rx, and ancestral foods chef. For the past 12 years, I've been helping people overcome acute and chronic health disorders and brain injuries using a 100% natural approach. Enjoy this episode and subscribe to this podcast to stay informed about your health, your food choices, and the healing power of sunlight. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Today I want to talk all about mineral deficiencies. I've been talking about mineral deficiencies a lot lately. I've been talking about them on my newsletter and, my Substack and Instagram. For those of you who don't know, I have a new Substack called Eat Heal Farm. You can check that out, and that's really going to be a place where I share about not only our journey, meaning my wife and I, our journey, our farm's journey to becoming a regenerative one, but I'm also going to be sharing a lot about food, soil health, how to eat the best food. And I think right now a lot of people have a really good understanding, or more and more people are coming to the understanding that, hey, a seasonal diet is super important, right? And due to sunlight, due to the impact that sunlight has on our food, due to the light code that is stored within our food. And my goal with this, with the Eat Heal Farm Substack, is to take this another step further. Like, yes, nature grows our food, we hope. I'll say more about that in a minute. But nature grows our food outside when we put it in the dirt, in the soil. It's hit with sunlight, rain, water, et cetera, and it grows our food, right? And so when we eat within seasonal context, we support our circadian biology in deeper ways because sunlight is seasonal, meaning the food that we can grow is seasonal, meaning the food that's available in our area varies from season to season, month to month. And this has a really significant impact on our health. And I think more and more people are coming to understand this. Yes, eat seasonal, because of the impact that food has on circadian biology. And when we eat outside of seasonal context, especially when we eat a lot of carbohydrates and sugar and so forth in the winter months, we don't have the UVB light present. It's just not present outside. It's not present in the sky if you live outside of the tropics during that time of year. And this can have a really negative impact on circadian biology, metabolic health, hormone health, which are all ruled by the state of your circadian biology, right? But the Eat Heal Farm Substack, I'm taking this a step further because yes, we have this information, we have this knowledge, it's reaching more and more people, but we have to take this a step further. You know, and now how can we look deeper? And this is just an example, I think, of how we're never done with healing. Like you're like, oh, organic food. Okay, we're done. Boom, it's organic. Organic is a thing. Organic food is a thing of the 90s. And we're moving more towards, we're gaining more wisdom. We're gaining more ancient knowledge on how to actually raise and cultivate our food, which extends far beyond organic. And now we're going into the regenerative ways of growing food, of nourishing and raising animals. And this is going to be the heartbeat, at least at this time, of the Eat Heal Farm Substack to teach you, hey, why do we need to go further than organic? What is the next step beyond organic? How do I actually, you know, shopping in grocery stores, we need to make this more of, we need this to be extinct. You know, of course, there are certain staples you get at the grocery store, but, you know, more and more we have to go away from buying our food at the grocery store. It's not going to support our health long term, but we also have to look beyond our health and other things that impact our health. The soil that food was grown in, who actually grew those foods? If you're buying organic food at Whole Foods, like, amazing, right, in a way. But I'm going to tell you, the people who sell to Whole Foods are, the bar is low. Their standards are low. We have no idea what they did to that food, where it came from, how it was grown. Was it grown outdoors in sunlight? Was it grown under fake lights? We're because technology continues to advance at this really, you know, it's like full on 1,000 miles an hour. You know, technology continues to expand and develop, and we're you know, quote unquote advanced. But the more advanced our technology becomes, the further we get disconnected from nature, and the further our food is becoming disconnected from nature. And I'm going to talk about that during this episode today. I'm going to talk about one of the root causes of mineral deficiencies that's overlooked, that's not talked about, that I'm sure at this time anyway, your naturopath or functional medicine doc or other holistic practitioner, just forget Western docs because they're out to lunch with almost everything, most of them anyway. Not that there aren't some good and aware ones, I'm sure there are. But I want to help you look at these issues a little bit deeper. And I'm also going to talk about grounding a little bit, and you know, how you can get the most out of your grounding practice. And you're like, wait a minute, this sounds like, what are all these topics, Heather? You know, we're talking about mineral deficiencies, we're talking about grounding, we're talking about the food system, right? What does this have to do with it? What does grounding have? And actually, these things are very connected. So the minerals in the soil, how mineral deficient you are, your grounding practice, these are all connected. So I wanted to open and share, you know, about that right off the bat, that we have to change the way we shop for our food, period. And this takes me, let's just dive right in here, right? Because many people today struggle with mineral deficiencies, right? And there are many reasons for this. We have to talk about, you know, some of the main ones here. So I just last week wrote a post on Substack, the Eat Heal Farm Substack, called The Real Cause of Mineral Deficiencies. And I would highly recommend taking a read here, because it also is going to show you, I'm going to try to do a lot of videos with my posts on the Eat Heal Farm Substack, because I want to show you all that, hey, I'm not perfect. I'm not, you know, yes, we live on a farm, we have cows, we have chickens, you know, we're getting, the pigs are on their way. Are we where we want to be with our farm? No, we're not there. There's a lot of work that needs to be done on the farm. There's a lot of ways we need to expand our farm to get to where we want to be with our farm. And ultimately, where we want to be is a place that grows the healthiest food possible, or that produces the healthiest food possible via our animals. And in order to do that, the soil has to be super healthy, and we have to have really good farming practices and grazing practices in order to achieve these things. We are not there yet. So if you're somebody who just has a backyard garden, or maybe you have some raised beds, or maybe you're thinking about getting into farming, whatever it may be, whether you have like 3 tomato plants, or you're trying to farm full on, or you have a few raised beds, I hope that on the Eat Heal Farm, I'm going to be sharing my journey, me and my wife's journey with our farm, and how to improve the quality of our soil, of our land. So you can see, hey, this is where we're at. This is what we're working with, which is really a piece of shit, the land we're on. And I'll get into why that is. But most people are, the land that they live on is a mineral deficient shit show. Let's just be honest. There's many reasons for that, which I'll get into. But on the Eat Heal Farm Substack, I'm showing videos in many of my posts as to where we are with our farm and how we're working to make it better. And I hope that that inspires you no matter where you're at with your farming and gardening and raised beds and whatever you may do, or whether it's just a thought in your mind. I hope that this inspires you to incorporate some of these practices into your own backyard, you know, whether you're feeding just yourselves or your family or whole community. I hope it inspires you. And I hope that this episode opens your eyes as to why these practices are so very important. So, you know, mineral deficiencies, it's a hot topic right now. You go into a holistic practitioner, what are they going to do? They're very likely going to test for mineral deficiencies. How are they going to do this? Well, they're going to do, maybe there's some standard mineral analysis tests. They may take a strand of your hair to test for mineral and heavy metal levels. Maybe they'll prick your finger or draw blood to test your mineral levels. You know, any way you slice it, that there are different ways to test mineral levels. And these testing protocols may seem like, oh yeah, that seems reasonable. That sounds like a good idea. This seems like X, you know, it's going to get me to what's going on, right? It's going to show me what's really going on with my mineral levels, right? And, you know, we need to understand that the mineral deficiency issue is much deeper than how these most practitioners are going to try to help you overcome them. And I think they're really well-intentioned. I think they truly think, hey, you're deficient in copper, you're deficient in iron, you're deficient in calcium. Let's get these in supplement form. Let's put them all together and let's improve your mineral levels. This approach is never, ever going to work. We are stuck in linear mindsets with our health, with our healing, and the Western testing methodologies keep us stuck in linear overdrive when it comes to our health. Okay. Oh, I'm deficient in this. That means I should take this supplement. And that's an old way of thinking about health and healing. We need to throw it in the garbage. It no longer works. It never has worked. It's not going to work. But we need to be also on the other end of things. Mineral deficiencies are a real thing. And they drive many symptoms. They're not the only driver behind our symptoms, but they often contribute to some people's symptoms. And this is in varying degree, and this depends on the individual, what the individual's been through, what they've experienced, what illnesses they have, what's their genetic predispositions, you know? So let's say you go to your doctor, and maybe some of you are like, hey, I did that. That's exactly what happened. You know, I sense this, okay? When you go to your doctor, they test the minerals. When you get your mineral analysis results back, it's going to reveal, oh, here's some low numbers. Others will likely be elevated. High minerals are, that's when it goes into high mineral levels are typically called heavy metal toxicity, right? So you'll either be mineral deficient in some areas, heavy metals in others. It's usually how it goes. Now, your health practitioner is going to get the results. They're going to meet with you and they're going to say, hey, okay, here's the plan. This is our strategy. You're going to take X, Y, and Z in pill form of these minerals that you're deficient in. And or they're going to suggest taking like some sort of glandular or organ supplement, desiccated liver, glandulars, or other organs to try to boost your mineral levels. Why? Because these organs, these parts of the body tend to be very mineral rich areas. So I mean, I think this is okay. We're getting closer. We're getting warmer. It's like, you know, hot, cold, we're getting warmer here, but I'm not a fan of this approach. I did an episode, I believe, on glandulars and why I'm not a fan. And if you want to deep dive into that, please go listen to that episode, but I'm going to sum it up here, you know, for you. I'm not a fan of this approach for many reasons. One, many of these supplements come from overseas, and there are thousands upon thousands, usually cattle, that these supplements are produced from. Okay. Now, there are no real regulations for international cattle and then coming into the US market. The standards, you could say it's grass-fed, you can say it's this and that, but the US isn't going over there and like, oh, let's see, what are they doing on this farm in New Zealand and on that farm, and do they meet USDA standards? That is important to note, because they're not only doing this with the glandular and organ supplements and the ancestral supplements, they're also doing this with grass-fed meat. Whole Foods, don't fucking buy your food from Whole Foods. Just stop buying your food from them. I know that it is very easy, convenient to go into Whole Foods and buy your food, or order it online and go in and pick it up in some sort of locker or whatever the fuck they're doing now. I know that's really easy. And maybe if you, like, you know, break your leg or something and you need food, you know, if you need food delivered to you or picked up to you, maybe then this is an option. But like, stop buying your food from Whole Foods. They are part of the whole food problem. They're part of the food problem because they support big ag. They're just putting, it's called greenwashing. They're just using, like, instead of brainwashing, it's greenwashing. They're like using green words like grass-fed, like pasture-raised, like organic. And they're getting these things from very big corporations who, absolutely, if you knew what was going on behind scenes, you would not buy food from them. These are the people that Whole Foods supports. Whole Foods is also weaning out local farmers who they used to really, hey, we're selling local pork, local grass-fed meat, we're selling it from our local farmers. Well, they're going more and more away from this because they can get quote-unquote grass-fed meat cheaper overseas. And so this, a lot of the meat that you eat, you purchase from Whole Foods, there's so many issues with this. But for one, grass-fed doesn't mean grass-fed. Pasture-raised doesn't mean pasture-raised. This is called greenwashing. They put these labels on the foods to make you think that you're doing something really good, and unfortunately you're not. And Whole Foods is an absolute, it's really driving this mentality, and it's harming our local farmers. And they don't care about local farmers or anything like that. They want to make money, right? I'm not shopping at Whole Foods unless I'm trapped somewhere and you know, need a piece of salami. So, you know, I highly recommend just that you stop buying your food from Whole Foods. There's a lot more to that, but that's just what I'm going to say right now. But so what I want to get back to is, you're mineral deficient, you're going to your holistic practitioner, glandulars, they're going to suggest organ, desiccated liver, you know, supplemental forms of organs. Now, for one, most of these products come from overseas. Not all of them, but most of them. That's number one. Number two, do we know if that animal was vaxxed, was given antibiotics? We don't. We don't know that. We really don't know that. And with the thousands upon thousands of cows that these supplement companies are working with, we really have no idea what's going on, especially with it being an international company with very little regulations. And this is something I really recommend you avoid. And not only that, these supplements usually are a rich source in minerals. And so they can swing the pendulum in the other way in a very rapid way. So let's say you were low in iron and you decided, I'm going to take some desiccated liver and maybe add in a couple other, some glandulars with that, or maybe some other organs in supplemental form. And the pendulum can swing very quickly to the other side and then you can develop the exact you know, other problem with, and then you have excess, and what are you going to do with that? And how does your body get rid of that? And this can be a real issue. It's very easy to do with organs and glandulars and supplement form. So I'm not a fan of this. I'm also not a fan because they don't get to the root of the issue. And neither does squirting minerals in your water. This does not get to the root of mineral deficiency issues. Okay. So, bottom line, the supplement approach to mineral deficiencies is really not helpful, especially long term. And if your body cannot absorb or assimilate the minerals, that these extra minerals you're putting into your body, then we're going to create a whole other host of issues with calcification issues and detox issues and iron detox issues and iron recycling issues. It can cause a bigger problem. So, you know, I am always about how do we solve this problem? Any problem that's really a problem can be solved if we go back to nature. How do we get closer to nature with this issue? How? Okay, supplements in glandular form may sound like, hey, isn't that like a natural thing? But anything in a supplement form, we're moving away from nature. We're not going closer to nature. But I want to invite you to ask yourself this question. So if you're somebody who struggles with mineral deficiencies, or you suspect that you do, the real question is, and let's say you're taking glandulars or maybe organs, or you're squirting minerals in, but what you want to ask yourself before you even go there is, can your body actually absorb and assimilate all of those minerals in the first place? The answer is often no. People have issues absorbing and assimilating the nutrients in their foods, period. And so if we just take in more of these things, it's not a solution to the problem. It's going to make the problem worse. So we don't want to just throw like heaps of minerals at the situation when most people can't even absorb them. We need to dig deeper. We need to look at nature more intimately when it comes to rectifying mineral deficiencies. So the next question you need to ask yourself is, why are you struggling with mineral deficiencies in the first place? Okay, this is going to vary from person to person. And so there are a lot of reasons behind this. This answer does not come in a one-size-fits-all bag. It varies from individual to individual and can be influenced by several factors. Some of those include antibiotic use, past and present, RX medication use, past and present, jab history, how much sunlight are you getting? Are you not getting enough? Are you getting heaps and you're sweating a lot outside in sunlight and you're not replenishing the minerals that are lost via perspiration? Do you have high stress levels? Because this can cause your body to, it'll use up your mineral stores really rapidly. Anxiety and depressive disorders very much contribute to mineral deficiencies because the body is utilizing these minerals to try to regulate itself. And so they can get depleted more easily in these sort of stressful and emotionally driven pathology states, PTSD, family history of advanced gut health issues. Okay, so anything really in the autoimmune category, Crohn's, even colitis. If there's a family history of this, then very likely you inherited a faulty gut. Are there things you can do about this? Yes, but we're going to have to work on repairing your gut, and not in ways that the mainstream will tell you how to do it. But, you know, there's a lot of ways you can do that. But it's just important to know that if this is in your family history, you may struggle more than others with mineral absorption. And so this really needs to be a focus of your healing practice. Your diet will influence your mineral levels. For example, if you eat a lot of plant foods, if you eat a lot of nuts, if you eat a lot of seeds, if you eat a lot of grains, these things contain more anti-nutrients than other foods. And if these anti-nutrients are not antidoted, then when you eat these foods, they enter your gut, they will block certain minerals from being absorbed in your gut. I believe I was highly mineral deficient during my vegetarian years, because, but I even went the extra mile then by soaking grains and soaking nuts and seeds and sprouting them before. And of course this helps, but it's not going to fix the whole issue there. Plant foods are simply less bioavailable. They contain more anti-nutrients. They contain more anti-nutrients for a few reasons. I'll name a couple of those. One is that they build up these anti-nutrients to help protect themselves in strong sunlight, from frost, from cold temperatures. And so these things act as a defense mechanism. They also do it to help keep pests away. It's like a natural, like, pesticide, herbicide in a way. It helps the plant stay strong and protects it from invasion by other animals and pests. So it's like, these are the plant, this is the built-in defense mechanism of the plant. And so just by nature, when we eat those, that same thing is going to occur in our gut. We're going to have absorption and assimilation issues due to the fact that they're going to block some of these minerals from being absorbed and assimilated in the gut. Now, the other thing that really influences mineral deficiencies, mineral states, is the health of the soil that your food is grown in. And now, while I could go down the rabbit hole with regard to how each one of these factors that I just named drives mineral deficiencies, today I want to talk about and focus on the role of soil health and its very prominent connection to modern day mineral deficiency issues. Okay. So you see, this is going to connect in the grounding. This is going to connect in why you shouldn't shop at Whole Foods. This is going to connect in to a lot of different areas of food and health and nature and so forth. When in doubt, go back to nature. When in doubt, get closer to nature, get closer to nature, get closer to nature. But the soil our food is grown in today is significantly depleted and lacking in minerals. It's deficient. If you watch the video on my Substack under this post, you will see that the soil that we've been blessed with on our farm is a desertified shit show. Honestly, you can't grow anything in it. Well, I mean, some grass comes up, which tells me there's a chance. It's not that nothing grows there. Some grass does come up, but it is deficient in minerals. Okay, most soil is deficient today. It's not containing the nutrient profile that it did 50 years ago, 100 years ago, and back further. It nowhere close to this. And this includes organic foods. You might say, Heather, I eat organic food, so this isn't an issue. That's not actually accurate. So to achieve USDA organic certification, there are no requirements of the health and state and mineral content of that soil that you grow your food in or vegetables in. There are no USDA organic requirements. That's not a requirement for to be able to grow potatoes and say they're organic. The soil health does not matter. They do not test for that. Okay, I'm going to talk about more about that in a minute. So, this story about soil health, I want you to stick with me for a minute. You know how I am passionate about getting to the root of a thing. And so this is why throwing glandulars and organ supplements at this issue, it's one reason why this approach isn't going to work. Because we have to go back, we have to look at when did this issue with our soil start to happen? Okay, when did the soil start becoming mineral deficient? This story started back in the 1800s, and each year it's getting worse, and it's getting worse and worse progressively, faster especially modern day with all the monocropping and so forth that I'll talk about here in a minute. But, you know, don't worry, like I'm going to tell you what you can do to improve this situation, but I want you to understand that when your doc tells you to take this supplement because you're mineral deficient, we're not even getting close to what the root of the problem is here, okay? So, to solve any issue, we have to go back to when the story began. When did this start? We cannot solve a problem, you know, at the end. You know, where did this story end? Where is the story present day? That's not going to be helpful. When did this story begin? That's where we have to go with our mineral deficiency issue. When did this story begin? So what I'm about to share with you, it might not sound like it's related to why your iron is low or why your ferritin is high or why your body has copper issues or struggles with poor magnesium absorption, right? Hang in here with me. And I think you're going to be like, okay, that makes sense. I get the root of the issue. So let's just be straight up here. I don't think we have to debate that Native Americans were the first humans to put roots down in America, right? I'm not going to argue with anyone about that, but I, you know, that's point blank. So these individuals naturally ate an animal-based diet, right? Rich in animal fat, rich in animal protein. These were like the OG nose-to-tailers. They did the bones, the marrow, the organs, the muscle meats. They utilized all parts of the animal, and the parts of the animal that didn't utilize, they gave back to the earth. It's really, when I read about cattle ranchers who happen to lose a cow, right? Cow dies out on the pasture, the body's there, it decays. The next season, what happens? There are all these grasses and flowers that flourish around where this animal basically took its last breath. And what this does to the soil and the nutrients it gives back to the soil is incredible, is astounding. Most people today throw away these parts of the animals. I mean, here's another example. You go to Whole Foods, they chop off the fat because they don't think people want it. They throw out the bones. What do? They throw in the fucking garbage. It's like, that is so wasteful. If there's one thing that is like my thing, I do not like to throw anything away. And I'm not a hoarder. I'm not saying I'm a hoarder. I'm you know, really speaking about food scraps, paper, you know, any paper we have, I will burn it. We have like burn piles and buckets and stuff. And it's like, no, we're not throwing that in the landfill. I'm burning it. When one of our chickens died this winter, what do? Well, we have to cull it immediately and then let's turn it into soup and we'll give the bones back to the earth. When we culled all 50 of our meat chickens last summer, we had a lot, there was a lot left over. You have the organs to deal with, you have the feathers to deal with. You know, what do you do with these things? Most people throw them away and put them in the landfill in a plastic bag. We threw them all in our compost, and that compost turned into, it's amazing this year. So I would just recommend anybody who tells you on a compost forum or Google not to compost animal material is full of shit. That stuff is amazing. It's going to bring really rich nutrients to your soil, to the earth. Please don't listen to that. Compost the heck out of it. Okay, anyway, let's go back to Native Americans, animal-based diet, lots of fat, lots of animal protein, you know, very little went to waste. And what was their primary food source at the time? Well, it was bison. It was buffalo. There were 60 million buffalo roaming the U.S. in 1800. Holy shit, people think that cows cause global warming. There are double, triple the amount of bison roaming the U.S. than cattle today. So, you know, and cattle are exponentially bigger than cattle, And so, first of all, if we just look at that, we can say that cows causing global warming doesn't even make sense. Okay. And there's a lot to that. And right, we're not considering CAFOs and so forth. But if these animals are out on the land, we had 60 million buffalo roaming the U.S. Nobody was complaining of carbon emissions or the weather changing or you know, wow, they're such a problem. You know, they weren't. They were nourishing the people on this land, and they were nourishing the land. This was the primary food source at the time, at that time. So what this means is that not only was it the primary food source, but we also had 60 million ruminants, buffalo, bison are ruminants, cows are ruminants. We had 60 million ruminants roaming the U.S. grounds, littering the ground, composting dead plant material. You know, so like, let's just take an example. When your native grasses grow in your area, they get to seed, the animals eat that. The old seed gets trampled with their hooves, and the hooves, as they walk upon it, it's like they're planting seeds. Those grass seeds get fertilized and planted into the soil and pushed down into the soil with their hooves. And fucking next year, what happens is the grass grows. The grass comes back. Okay, so we had 60 million ruminants, massive animals roaming the U.S., littering the ground, littering, peeing on it, defecating on it, composting dead plant material, seeding grasses, all of which improve soil quality, prevent the erosion of soil, make the soil more resilient and vital, improve the water storage capacity of the roots that are in that soil, you know, the plants that are grown in that soil. And so when bison, and we can say cattle as well, are allowed to roam in herds, these are prey animals. So they're not going to stay in one place at a time. They're not just going to hang out and stay in one place at a time, okay? Naturally, how these animals are in nature, how these prey animals are in nature, they'll go to a spot, they'll eat the grasses, they'll move on. They're not going to stay in one place because it's not, this is survival of the fittest. And if they were to stay in one place, they'd be at a higher risk of death. So they moved on. They never stayed in one place for very long at all. They continued to move on and move on and move on. This is herd impact on the land, okay? This is the benefit of herd impact. This in and of itself, this is basically the definition of regenerative farming. This is how the organic beef you buy is different than the regenerative beef you buy. The organic beef you buy, or bison today, because there are some bison that are raised for commercial purposes. They're not roaming the land like they once were, but for commercial purposes. But here's the difference. Organic beef, the standards note, you do not have to move the cattle. They can literally stay on the same land forever, forever and ever. They don't have to be moved ever. This is a huge detriment to the land, massive detriment to the land when these herd animals, these animals of prey, are not moved to new pasture and that old pasture has time to rest. In organic farming, you don't have to move the herd. They stay there. It's simple. It's easy. You can, you know, you can just feed them organic feed, keep them on the same land, organic. That practice right there is a detriment to the soil, and it's a detriment to the ecosystem, and then it's a detriment to your health, because those animals, the grass that's in that area, if there's any, hopefully there is going to be nubbed down so low to the ground, and it's not going to have any time to regenerate and grow back. And so then those cows are going to become mineral deficient themselves. They're going to become nutrient deficient. Now let's take a regenerative farmer today. Today, regenerative farming means that you move the herd. Hopefully you move the herd at least once a day, up to a few times a day. Now you can see why ranchers may not want to do this, because that's more work than just keeping the cows in one area and feeding them organic grain and maybe some grass, and they don't move ever. But that's a negative to the land, that's a negative to the animal, that's an ultimately going to be a negative for you. Regenerative farming moves the animals. It tries to mimic what was going on with the bison, the 60 million bison back in the day. It tries to mimic that pattern because we know that not only was nature healthier and thriving when our bison were living in that way naturally, the land was healthier, the people were healthier, the grasses grew back every year, the weather patterns were more natural. And so this is the difference. This is why I say organic is a thing of the 90s. We need to let it go. Like, you know, we need to at least not make that be our main focus. Our main focus right now needs to be regenerative food sources, because there are many reasons for this. But what I'm going to focus on here today is, so those animals that are raised in a regenerative way, and let's say maybe produce is grown on that land then, right? Well, what happens is there are naturally more minerals in that soil. There's more water in that soil. The cows that are grazing that land have more minerals because they're getting fresh grass every day, maybe every few hours. And this is going to be create a very a much more richer nutrient profile. So when bison and cattle are allowed to roam in herds, and then they're able to mimic what naturally occurred with the buffalo in the 1800s, where they just naturally moved and grazed, you know, they moved from parcel to parcel, we're going to have a much more positive impact on the soil. The majority of the meat that's sold in grocery stores today is not grown in a regenerative way. And if they tell you it is, it's likely greenwashing. I'm going to give you some resources at the end of the episode as to some farmers that are doing it in the regenerative way, truly regenerative way, so you can start buying your meat from these farmers. I will not buy meat from the grocery store anymore. I made a pact. I said, this year, nope, I'm done. No more meat from the grocery store. I don't trust it. It's nutrient deficient. It's not going to be the best for me. Does it cost more for me to buy my meat from regenerative farmers? Yes. But this is the next, this is a podcast and a Substack to come. We have to get past looking at just the cost of things, because the cost of how, of the impact that's happening to the land when we don't move our animals, what's the cost of that? Soil erosion, desertification, topsoil erosion, increased wildfires, versus paying $20 more for, you know, for the meat that I'm going to buy, or however much money, versus that's worth it. That's worth it. We have to look beyond the price tag. It's not just about the cost. What's the cost to the land? What's the cost to future generations? What's the cost to, you know, the environment? What's the cost to the animals? Okay. Let's talk about that in the price tag. That's, we have to have a more holographic look at the price tag. Okay. So what happens is when the earth is trampled upon and defecated upon by herd animals, well, soil and its roots are able to hold and store more water. And what happens when you store more water? Here comes the grounding. What happens when your cells store more water? What happens when your cells have more easy water around them? The charge in your cells goes up. Because why? More potassium, more sodium, a higher, more magnesium, a higher charge is within and around the cell. This is the same fucking thing with the soil. So if you have these animals who trample the earth, defecate, urinate on it, move to the next area. You know, what happens is we're creating a richer mineral content in our soil. Everybody's into grounding today. I love grounding. I'm not going to knock grounding. It's awesome. Yes, you should do it. Grounding's amazing. Are there some parameters? Sure, you shouldn't be grounding near cell towers or smart meters or, you know, these sort of things. Again, back to nature. How do I get closer to nature? Ground at the beach? Yes. Ground by a cell tower? No. Ground outside a smart meter? Absolutely not. You know, ground in the middle of a city? No, absolutely not. I wouldn't do that. But ground in nature? Yes, absolutely. Why? Because the electrical current that is stored in the earth is going to come up through the bottoms of your feet, or if you're laying on the earth, through your body and freaking recharge you. But guess what? This is a very, this is a correlation between grounding, the soil, our health, that isn't talked about yet. And that is, if we know how good grounding is for us and how it recharges and restores our battery. But if the ground we're grounding on, if the earth we're grounding on is a desertified shit show with the topsoil eroded, that's unable to hold water, guess what? What kind of charge are you going to be getting in your cells? Not much. So this is a whole other thing. This is a whole other impact of regenerative farming and how herd animals not only improve soil health, but they improve the mineral content of the soil. They improve the amount of water that's able to be stored. So even if, like, for example, we live in the desert, okay? We live in the high desert. So people who live in the high desert need to be adhering to these farming practices even more. Why? Because we don't have the water. We don't have the water that other places have. And so what happens is there's more drought. The grass, you know, gets green in the spring and then dies really soon after. Why does it die so soon after? Because our soil is deficient, it's desertified, and the roots are not deep enough, strong enough, capable of holding the water when it does rain. So what does everybody do here? Oh, I have irrigation rights. Irrigation rights wouldn't even be necessary if we improved the quality of our soil so that when it did rain, even if it goes a month, the roots, the grasses can still flourish and be nourished because they've stored up the water and it's able to pull upon that in times of drought. So this is important because this is driving our nutrient deficiencies. So this is why organic food it's not the gold standard anymore. Okay. We want our food grown in a regenerative way. We want the soil that our food is grown in to have animal impact. We want it to have had a rest from the animals, and then our food is able to grow there and it's going to be richer in nutrients. So this correlation between water in plants, water in the soil, and water in us, I really want to make a point here, because when plants are able to store water optimally, their nutrient profile improves. They have a more, their charge improves, their electrical charge improves. They're less susceptible to drought. They're less susceptible to pest invasion. They have longevity. There's less soil erosion. When you have more easy water built up around your cells, the same exact story is true. Your nutrient profile improves, the way your body absorbs and assimilates nutrients improves, you're less susceptible to disease, you're less susceptible to invasion by, like, let's say you get bit by a tick, or let's say, you know, your immune system is stronger, you're able to fight back. There's less nutrient deficiencies in your body. There's more electrical current and electrical charge. Your longevity increases. such a direct correlation here between soil health and your health and water. It's a whole story that I hope, especially with the Eat, Heal, Farm Substack and this podcast, that people are able to really understand. And if you love grounding and you want to get the most out of your practice, and that's what you can get on board with for making the change from organic to regenerative, then so be it. Okay. You know, whatever that, you know, sore spot is in you that motivates you to go regenerative, that's a really important way. That's a really important, you know, thing to consider. Now, so there's a lot I can say about herd impact. There's a lot more to it, but just for the sake of this episode, I wanted to focus on how it improves the electrical charge in the soil health, the soil quality, and the mineral content in that soil. And so then when you eat that, guess what? Your mineral profile is going to go up naturally from real foods, okay? And I just want to make share an example here of when, you know, go back to kind of like what's the root of this problem, because the bison were there, 60 million of them or so, and now they're not. So okay, what happened here, right? So when European settlers came to America, they started killing bison for sport. These fucking idiots. Like, it makes my blood boil so bad. Here are the Native Americans, a food source. They're putting it to use. They know what to do with the animal. They're eating it. They're surviving off of it. They're having ceremonies around it. Thank you for, you know, and so here comes the Europeans, and they just literally mass bison genocide because they wanted like to sell bison skulls and hides and see how big their dick was from doing this practice. I'm sorry, but that's just how it was. And this was the root cause of why we're in the situation we are today with our soil health. Are there other things that contribute? Oh, absolutely. Monocrop farming, pesticides, herbicides, you know, ammonium nitrate, synthetic fertilizers, you know, add all this to it. But the root of it starts here, starts when the Europeans came in and did a bison mass genocide on these animals. Okay. So then what happened? Well, what happened was, within a 50 year period, beginning around the mid 1800s or so, within a 50 year period, over 40 million buffalo were killed. Okay. For no reason. They didn't even do anything. Just left them on the land, just left them there. Okay. So now what happened after that? What happened between 1930 and 1940? Well, we saw the first effects of the bison genocide on soil health during what? The Dust Bowl. The Dust Bowl fucking blew the topsoil off. It didn't have the roots to stay in the ground. It no longer had the integrity. It no longer had the electrical charge it once had. It no longer had the vitality it once had. And heaps of soil, topsoil, were just swept across the affected areas. So this is my personal opinion. That would never have happened, at least not to the extent that it did, if we didn't do what we did to the buffalo. And where was the Dust Bowl primarily? What areas did it affect? Mostly the Great Plains, where most of the bison were. So if it's me reading the signs, you know, it's clear as day. So take the bison away and the soil starts to erode. The topsoil starts to erode. The mineral quality of the soil starts to diminish. So today, not only are there zero bison roaming the lands in this way, we also have monocrop agriculture taking up 442 million acres of what could be regenerative farmland. If anybody think Bill thinks that Bill Gates buying up, you know, farmland and the Chinese buying up farmland is like a good idea because you think it's going to feed the world. That whole mentality has to shift. And it's, they're not doing it in a way that's going to regenerate the land. Are you kidding me? So, okay. Now, what do you do about it? Okay, now that you know, okay, the soil shit, Heather. Thanks for telling me this whole story. Like, that sucks. Now what do I do? Because we have to get back to, okay, what's the root cause? Now what do we do about it? Because, you know, just trying to do something about an issue before knowing the root cause is not going to get you to success. This is why when I do an intake with people who come for a homeopathic session, we need to get to the root cause. You tell me you have acne. I'm not just going to give you something for acne. It's like, why do you have acne? Because it's not like why she had acne or he has acne. It's not the same cause. What's the root cause? And we say that term is thrown around so much, root cause this and that, but really, we really have to explore this question. You know, that's the lens we have to look through. So now what do you do about it? You're like, this is a shit show, Heather. You know, honestly it is, but the good news is more people are understanding why organic is a thing of the 90s, why it's no longer the gold standard, why we have to shift to the regenerative way, why we have to get our wrap our brains around. We have to get past, how is this going to support my health? We have to get past just looking at problems, especially with our food system. We have to get past, you know, just looking at it from how is this going to benefit me? No. How is this going to benefit the land? How is this going to benefit my niece and nephew in the future? How is this dollar, how is this $50 that I spend on this meat, what's it actually going to do? What's it going to do not only for me? What's it going to do to the land? What's it going to do to the soil? What's it going to do to the animals on that land? How's that going to impact future generations? How's that going to impact my health? We have to look at our food from a different lens than we've been looking at it from. How's this going to benefit me? Now, how is this going to help me save money? Which, you know, that's a trap. And I'm not somebody who has endless supplies of money. This is not coming from a place of, I don't have to think about money. I very much do have to think about money. But what I do is, like, so for example, people in our community, which there's a lot of poverty in our community, they have a problem with some people have an issue with the price of our raw milk. $7.50 for a quart of A2 raw milk. Okay. So, but, you know, they say, oh, we can't afford that. We can't afford that. But how much money are people in the area spending on alcohol, spending on cannabis, right? Oh, I'm going to tell you a lot of, not everyone, but a lot of people are spending their money on that. You can't tell me you don't have $7.50. You would pay that for so much cannabis versus raw milk. And this is not just a story of my community. Everybody has these knee-jerk reactions to how much food costs. Food costs a lot of money. Should it cost a lot of money? I don't know, but we have to let go of that story. We have to let go of food shouldn't cost that much. That story keeps us trapped. It keeps us trapped in an old, you know, way of thinking about our food. Let me tell you something. You put yourself in that farmer's shoes who is rotating their cattle 3 or 4 times a day to new pasture, who is fronting the bill for how much that land costs to rotate those cattle around so they can have a regenerative farm and sell a regenerative product. how much risk they put themselves at financially because regenerative farming isn't subsidized. So the government isn't giving them shit. They have to put up all of their own money and take out loans for that. Because they want to make the world a better place. They want to improve the health of the soil. They want to give you and people a better product. They wake up at the ass crack of dawn to start moving their cattle. Think about the price of if you have to go in and buy a gallon of milk for somebody who just, you know, keeps their cattle inside, their dairy cattle inside, hooked up to machines. They're just eating out of like a feedlot trough. They never really see the light of day, and all their milk is drained out of them twice a day into a big vat. Versus somebody who has to get up in the morning, wash the cow's udders, feed the cow, you know, some organic alfalfa or something to while it's being milked, it needs a treat. And then, you know, processing that milk and, you know, buying all the containers to store the milk in, making sure the cow's healthy. Are they okay? I think it's worth $7.50 a quart or however much that other farmers are charging for quality milk, right? It's like we have to look past the price tag. And what is the cost on the other levels? What is the cost there? So spend your dollar on regenerative farm products, produce, dairy, meat as often as you are able. I know it's like every other week I make a big, I buy my meat from regenerative farmers. The price tag is I have to swallow that. I have to be like, I've just gotten to this point where, hey, that's worth it. I'm going to keep doing it. And this is a new reality. This is a new way we have to approach our food. We're not approaching it like this yet. And so this is going to change the soil health. It's going to change the health of the environment. It's going to create a better situation for future generations. Hopefully it's going to inspire more people to be farmers and do it in a regenerative way. Because they're going to see, oh, wow, you know, this is really, if you look at a landscape, this is the last thing I'll say. If you look at a landscape from an area that has had regenerative practices on it versus an area that hasn't, which actually I'm getting ready to post a video on that very soon. I don't know, today, tomorrow, sometime this week on that in our little town. It's night and day. It's absolutely night and day. And so the reason being is because there's more. Why is one pasture greener than the other? That's not sprayed with, that's not, you know, applied synthetic fertilizers to it. It's because the mineral and nutrient content is richer. The water content is, the storage capacity is deeper in that green pasture versus the one that's not green. And so rectifying mineral deficiencies starts by eating food with a richer mineral content. Now, you can go to my Substack, the Eat Heal Farm Substack, The Real Cause of Mineral Deficiencies, where I list some of my favorite regenerative farmers. There are others. There are other people doing this work. These are just the farms that I have, you know, purchased their products and been like, that's good. That's good stuff. So I've listed that there for you. Please enjoy. Spread the love about the Eat Heal Farm Substack. This is something I'm really committing to, not only to help to share our journey to regenerative farming with you all, but to help you understand how to make better food choices, to give you some of our recipes. A lot of you have been asking for a homemade yogurt recipe that's coming, I promise. And I'm going to post it on the Substack very soon. Okay, everyone. Have an awesome day. See you soon. Thanks so much for tuning into today's episode. To learn more about my approach to health, to see all of my creations in the kitchen and all of my Sunlight RX tips, you can follow me on the gram at Sunlight_RX.
and subscribe to this podcast to access weekly episodes.